Hey, I'm so glad you're here. Welcome back to the show. We're on episode 140, and I'm so excited to bring this episode to you. It is a super informative episode, and we are talking about avoiding cesarean for Cesarean Awareness Month, which is April, and specifically, really avoiding that primary cesarean. And I go into why this is important in the episode. But this just popped in my head that I wonder how many more first-time moms have cesareans than second-time moms. It's almost like once you have your first vaginal birth, you're in the safety zone. Not to say that there exists no mom that has had a vaginal birth and then a cesarean. That definitely there's many, many moms. But in the episode, I get into the two causes, the two main reasons for cesarean. And those two main reasons are more likely to happen with first-time moms, just because first-time moms tend to have longer births, and first-time moms tend to be more impressionable, meaning more likely to agree to induction. They're less likely to be informed. So I really do think our first-time moms have a higher risk of this primary cesarean. So if that's you, don't worry, you are really informed. You're here. You're listening to the podcast. But let's get even more informed on this specific topic. And I'm going to wrap up with six ways that you can avoid a primary cesarean. This is not your average birth podcast because you are not the average mom. Welcome to Unapologetically Unmedicated. I'm your host, Fierce Lizzie, and I am unapologetic when it comes to normal, physiologic, unmedicated birth. I want you to have your best birth because I know that an empowered birth leads to an empowered motherhood. If you want to be the boss of your birth and do birth your way, it's time to get informed, educated, and empowered. April is Cesarean Awareness Month, and I want this episode to take a slightly different approach in. Well, actually, I don't think it's a different approach. Bringing awareness is exactly what we're doing in this episode. And specifically, I want to bring awareness to avoiding cesarean and especially avoiding that primary cesarean, which means that the first cesarean, because once you have a C-section, it kind of follows you around for the rest of your reproductive years. And I think this needs to be distinguished from what we sometimes can see on social media. I'm in my little birth bubble, so I see a lot of cesarean awareness, but I do think the mainstream message, maybe during this month, during Cesarean Awareness Month, is celebrating cesarean and celebrating women who have had cesareans. And while that is fine and that's important, I don't want to like not talk about moms and how strong they are to have endured a cesarean. I think that is part of the problem in how normalized C-sections have become. Approximately 1.3 million women in the United States undergo a cesarean section every single year. It is the most common surgery done in the United States. It is so common. And most of them are not necessary. Now, what I do want to talk about some ways to prevent unnecessary cesareans, but first I want to help you understand why. Like, of course, no mom is signing up for a cesarean, right? No mom is like going into her birth thinking, well, maybe I'll have a cesarean. Like, pretty much all moms, now there is a small percentage of women who want an elective cesarean, but most moms, they don't want to have a cesarean. They don't want to have major surgery, but it's deeper than that. It's deeper than just not wanting a cesarean. Now, of course, there are benefits to cesareans. Of course, thank God we have cesareans now because they are a life-saving measure. We have used cesareans in a way that are improving outcomes in some situations. They do save lives. They do lower risks for many moms. Many moms, the cesarean option is a lower risk option than spontaneous vaginal birth. That's true for some moms, but they are so overused. I kind of want to, you know, I love analogies. I don't know if this is the best analogy, but we're going to compare screen time to cesarean. So screen time is a neutral tool. Let's just think of it as a neutral tool, just like a cesarean. Now, there are risks and there are benefits. Now, obviously, screen time isn't saving lives. Well, I don't know. Speak for yourself, Lizzie. Maybe it is saving lives. Maybe it's saving the life of a stay-at-home mom at the end of the day who just needs to make dinner in silence. But bear with me on this analogy, because I specifically want to highlight the overuse of cesareans with this analogy. Now, just like with screen time, I get it. There is no shame from me for a mom using screen time or even overusing screen time. I don't care. I honestly don't care what you do in your home. Just like there's no shame to the cesarean mom, okay? There is no shame. Now, when we talk about like screen time shame, this is very often self-imposed. When I feel bad about my screen time, that is literally the only person that can make me feel bad about it is myself. That is self-imposed because I know I can do better things for my children than screen time. So if I am feeling shameful around screen time, it's probably because I know something's out of balance and I know I could do something differently and maybe support my children better, right? And then sometimes I'll use screen time and there's no shame at all because I know I did all the right things for my kids before putting the screen time on, before resorting to screen time. I know that the benefits of the screen time are going to outweigh the risks of the screen time. Now, this is true for cesarean. This is absolutely true for cesarean. This wasn't the analogy I was going to go with, but this is working really well. Because you better believe there are moms who did everything the right way. And we're going to talk about those everythings in this episode. And they still had a cesarean. Now, the analogy that I was actually planning on going with for this was with the overuse and how, think about when, if you're a mom already and you had a day where there was a little too much screen time, like, you know, that wasn't the best option, but man, you were tired. Man, you had a lot of work to do that day. Man, you didn't sleep well. Just this one time. I'm going to do better for them tomorrow, right? And that's fine. That's fine. Screen time, literally, the risk of screen time is so minimal, right? And you can do better the next day. But the thing is that mentality, knowing screen time isn't the best option, but using it because you've got a lot going on that day with your health, with your energy, okay? You're human. You are human. OBs are human too. And you better believe they are using cesareans on days when they could have done better for their clients. And they know that, on days when they were tired, on days when they could have probably waited it out a few more hours, but they had other plans or whatever, because they're human. And honestly, this is where this analogy doesn't really work great, because you are always going to do the best that you can for your kids because you're their mom and you're a good mom. That OB is not your mama. That OB is at work. They're just getting through the day sometimes. And look how easy it is for a mom, a good mom, to slip into, oops, we had too much screen time today. It's so easy for even probably a good cesarean, a good OB, to slip into, oops, I probably relied on cesarean a little too much today. Because it absolutely is overused. So I don't really, in this episode, want to get into the specifics on when a cesarean is for sure needed and when it's definitely not. I mean, this is important when we talk about the overuse of cesarean, but for the most part, that is a hard question to answer because it is a judgment call. It's a judgment call on if a mom needs a cesarean or not in many, many cases. Sometimes it's an easy judgment call. Sometimes it's not. And your judgment may be different than my judgment. And for sure, an OB's judgment is going to be different than like a home birth midwife's judgment. So the top two reasons for a cesarean we know are labor that isn't progressing is one of the top two, and that the baby is in distress is the other top two. Now, these are both based on a judgment call, 100%. How long is long? How long is long? You go ask a home birth midwife and then go ask an OB how long labor should be. The one that knows physiology knows that labor can just be long sometimes. So how long is really long? That is a judgment call. Of course, ACOG, the American College of Obstetricians and Gynecologists, who kind of make these guidelines for practicing OBs in the United States, they do have guidelines on what they consider is long. And you know what? You should know those guidelines. You should know those guidelines to see if your OB or your provider or whatever is resorting to it on a day when they're tired because they don't want to wait. Or is it really, truly, are you extending beyond what is normal? Now, I'll say this for long there. If your baby's doing fine and you're doing fine, it's fine. We can wait, right? That's another thing that's a judgment call. Who is the one that's tired of waiting? Is it you? Or is it the OB who wants to be off shift? These are important things to think about. And then with the fetal heart tones, fetal distress, right? There's a huge variance in fetal heart tones by nature. There is a variance. Sometimes they'll go up and down, right? And oftentimes there are things that can be done to support baby and even improve fetal heart tones that are looking non-reassuring, that are looking bad. There are things you can do to improve those fetal heart tones. And a lot of times the reason the baby is not doing great in, like, you know, a vaginal low risk birth is because we've messed with birth too much. We've started Pitocin. I've talked about Pitocin in many other episodes, right? So these are often judgment calls. And both of these, baby in distress and labor being long, happens when you don't support physiology. Now, I cover how to support physiology. I cover both of these reasons for cesarean in depth inside of Unmedicated Academy so that hopefully you can be the one making the judgment call instead of someone else making it for you. Okay. And we're going to talk a little bit more about choosing your provider because that's not a judgment call you want to be making when you're in labor and you shouldn't. So you need to really trust your provider and trust their judgment. Now, when the decision is made to have a cesarean, of course, we hope that the benefits of the cesarean outweigh the risks of having a major surgery and that staying pregnant or continuing to labor was actually less safe than baby being born. That's the hope, that all cesareans are necessary and needed. Okay, but of course, there are also obvious risks to any major surgery, whether it's needed or not. It's just more of a slap in the face when it's not needed. It's more infuriating and unfair when it's not needed, and you take on these risks when you didn't need to. So again, most women don't want to have surgery to birth their babies. But I think the biggest problem here is how casual the cesarean has become. And honestly, it is casual for the surgeon. It's usually done in under an hour, of course, you know, like the prep, like when you have a planned cesarean, it actually, you go in really early, you have to do a lot of prep, you can't eat, blah, 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 blah. It does take a little bit longer, right? But the actual time that the provider is in there doing the cesarean, 30 minutes to an hour, much faster than waiting on labor. I guarantee you, they're waiting around for way longer than an hour for a mom who is birthing unmedicated. So with a cesarean, the surgeon gets to go in and get it done. Similar to that screen time analogy. It's also like another analogy for you, tying your kids' shoes for them instead of having them work it out, sometimes very slowly working it out on their own, because you just got to go that day, right? It is so casual and, dare I even say, fun for them to do the surgery. They are surgeons. They like doing surgery. They enjoy it. I saw a photo on Instagram just this week that went sort of viral in the birth space. It was a photo of three OBs. Their faces were blurred out. I cannot for the life of me figure out where this photo, like what hospital it's from. It's obviously like a teaching hospital. And one of the OBs just finished her 100th cesarean. I kid you not, there was a cake and a shirt that were celebrating 100 C-sections. Her shirt said, it was a bright pink shirt, my 100th C-section, with a scalpel on the shirt. Celebrating what is potentially the most traumatic day of 100 women's lives. That is the mindset. They like doing surgery. They think it's fun. It's easy for them. They're not always thinking about what that means for you and what you will be carrying around with you for the rest of your life, and that's going to be impacting the rest of your reproductive years. This is the awareness I think needs to be brought to cesareans. They are not casual. They are a big deal. Most of them are unnecessary. And one cesarean will change your reproductive future forever. That's why it is so important to avoid the primary cesarean, the very first cesarean. We're going to get more into that in VBACs in just a second. But let's talk about rates. So the World Health Organization says that a healthy cesarean rate is around 10 to 15%. No more than 20. And that a rate higher than 20%, right, is actually more harmful than helpful to overall to moms and babies. And this is exactly what we are seeing right now in the United States. The U.S. has a very high rate of infant and maternal mortality compared to other similar wealthy nations. And we also have a very high rate of cesarean. Not the highest, okay? I guess we can be thankful for that. But our cesarean rate is 32.1% overall. And the primary cesarean rate, again, that first time cesarean, is 22.5%. So much higher than that 10 to 15 healthy amount of cesareans. So what a coincidence that our cesarean rate is high and our infant and maternal mortality rates are also high. Again, compared to other nations similar to us. And both of these numbers have increased in recent years, within the past 4, 5, 6 years, on the rise. And in the last 30 years, so when I was born, much, much lower rates of intervention overall. So of course, let's talk about the risks a little bit. Of course, just like with any surgery, right? There are common minor complications, but also some life-threatening risks that come with cesarean. And any surgery, right? Any surgery, including excessive bleeding, so hemorrhage, blood clots, injury to other organs during surgery, injuries to baby, future risks with abnormal placentas, including placenta previa and placenta accreta, infection, and as the number of cesareans increase, so do these risks, these life-threatening risks increase the more cesareans you have. In fact, some providers will tell you after 2, 3, 4 cesareans, like, you shouldn't have any more babies. And that's something moms need to know. They need to know if they are planning a family that one cesarean can limit the amount of family that you can have, can take that choice away from you by limiting the number of babies you can have because you can't have so many cesareans. You can't keep having cesareans. And one of the risks that come with repeat cesareans is that they have to take out your whole uterus, a hysterectomy, because of some of these risks. So it's usually the bleeding, right? They can't figure out where the bleeding, they have to take out the whole uterus. You're not having babies after that, right? This is the part that's not talked about enough, is the risk that comes with repeat cesareans. Once a mom has a cesarean, she is more likely to continue to have cesareans for many reasons, really. Now, VBACs stands for vaginal birth after cesarean. VBACs have a high success rate, actually. Now, numbers show a kind of a wide span, 50 to 80% of moms who attempt a VBAC will have a successful VBAC. It's on the higher end, even higher if a mom has only had one cesarean. It's even higher if a mom has already had a vaginal birth after a cesarean. And these numbers have such a wide range because VBAC success depends greatly on your provider and where you are giving birth. What hospital, what location, what birth center, what home, which home birth provider you have greatly depends on that. Meaning nothing to do with your body, not a lot to do with the first reason you had a cesarean. Everything to do with your provider and your location's attitudes around VBACs. So the problem is, and this is why our rate is so high, even though VBAC is successful in high numbers, a low percentage of moms are actually attempting VBACs. Again, for so many reasons. There's so many reasons. Fear being one of them. Mistrust in our bodies being one of them. Trauma being another one, right? There are a lot of mental blocks for moms having VBACs, but the thing that's holding them back the most is, again, those providers' attitudes and those locations' attitudes. So the biggest reasons moms aren't getting the VBACs they want, or they're not even attempting a VBAC, is because providers are not supportive of VBACs. And there are even hospitals who have banned VBACs, meaning they will not even let you. If you've had a cesarean, you are being scheduled for another cesarean, regardless of what you want. Of course, we know that that's BS, right? We're going to call that out. You have options and you have a choice. And if you want to have a vaginal birth after a cesarean, you can. Hopefully that looks like you finding the right provider and not birthing at the hospital that has banned VBACs. But that also can look like you showing up in active labor and saying, sorry, we're doing this vaginally, right? Because I get it that not everyone can fire and hire the perfect unicorn OB. There's also state bans on VBACs. So some states do not allow home birth midwives to attend VBACs legally, right? Honestly, we need a whole episode on VBACs. We need a whole episode. I'm straying from the topic here. Let's get back to cesarean awareness. Now, one thing I do want to mention too, before we get to, I haven't even touched on how to avoid cesarean, right? But one thing I want to mention is that cesarean is not the easy way out. I think that a lot of the mainstream kind of message is like, oh, unmedicated birth moms think they're so much better. They think cesareans are so easy. Like, that's so wrong. Unmedicated birth moms know that cesareans are the hardest way to give birth. That's why we want you to have an unmedicated birth. That's why we love unmedicated birth, okay? So when we're talking about unmedicated birth and avoiding cesareans, it's because we want you to have an easier birth. We know that cesarean birth is the hardest and can be more physically challenging for both mom and baby. So when we talk about like, oh, cesarean bad, natural birth good, just know it's always from a place of wanting better for moms and babies. And also know that there are so many details and nuances that can get overlooked in these larger, more general conversations, okay? Now, that is not to say don't try, don't be informed, don't do your best, okay? Do try, do be informed, do set yourself up for success, because that is what is going to give you a fighting chance at avoiding cesarean. And if you don't avoid a cesarean, you're going to have a little bit more peace, even if your birth doesn't go to plan, knowing that you hopefully utilized your resources and you pursued every avenue and that it was truly a needed cesarean. Okay. Another thing for any cesarean moms that are listening, you can love the day that you met your baby and be so thankful for the way that your baby came into this world and still be livid and sad and upset and angry about the way that your birth went down. It can be both. Okay. So let's get to ways to avoid cesarean. So there was a study that came out from a hospital who lowered their primary cesarean rate from 28.9% to 12.2%. Hold up, rewind, visualize these numbers. 28.9%, so 29%, basically almost 29% to 12.2%. Cut it in half, more than half. In 12 months, in 1 year of making these changes. So they had like a project team, a quality improvement project team that identified and implemented 3 physiologic birth parameters over a 12-month period. And they were able to promote more, have more vaginal births and lower their cesarean rate. So these are the 3 things they did. 1, they reduced elective induction of labor in women less than 41 weeks pregnant. Meaning they did not follow the ARRIVE trial. Okay. No 39-week inductions there. No 40-week inductions. The second thing they did was they standardized triage routines to admit women greater than or equal to 4 centimeters dilated. So they did not admit anyone who was really, really early in labor. Okay. If your cervix is 4 centimeters, labor has started, right? When we talk about inductions, not that, you know, these women should be induced or anything like that. But when we talk about inductions, we always look at the cervix first. This is why the hospital is so cervix centric. Because the cervix that's soft and dilated is a body that's ready for birth. And so not that I agree with checking women at 4 centimeters. All those women going into the hospital are not you. Not you who's prepared and knows what to expect and knows what early labor feels like and knows what active labor feels like and knows what late active labor feels like, right? So this is just a great way to make sure women aren't being admitted too early, because we know in early labor, labor can just stop, especially with interruptions. And the hospital is one big ol' interruption. All right, the third thing that they did in this study was they increased the use of intermittent auscultation as opposed to continuous fetal monitoring for fetal surveillance. We talk about that all the time, right? Now, they also did a fourth thing, and I think this is really important too, is the team also calculated each OB's primary cesarean rate monthly and delivered these rates to their providers. It's kind of like goal setting, right? Like, you're never going to hit your goal if you're not tracking your goal, if you're not focused on your goal, right? That would be like getting money advice from someone who doesn't know how much money they have in their bank account. Like, no. OBs should absolutely be tracking their cesarean rates, right? This actually brings up another good thing about the ARRIVE trial, or bad thing about the ARRIVE trial. And again, this hospital had low cesarean rates. They did not follow the ARRIVE trial, which the ARRIVE trial says when you induce every first-time mom at 39 weeks, you have less cesareans. Well, this hospital proved there are other things you can do to reduce your risk of, or reduce your numbers of cesarean, right? The ARRIVE trial is flawed. And we are actually not seeing the results of that study play out in the same real-life clinical settings. In that study, they also were watching cesarean rates. So providers knew someone was watching how they're practicing and how many cesareans they're doing. So they practiced better. They did inductions more responsibly. The same thing applies to this hospital. These cesareans were being mindful of their cesarean rate. They weren't celebrating their high cesarean rate. They weren't celebrating 100 cesareans, right? They were being mindful of it. And that makes a big difference. So the good news is you can do all of these, almost all four of these, for yourself when you take control of your birth. And I will teach you how. Inside of Unmedicated Academy, you will learn each of these steps, each of these four things that the hospital did, why they're important, and how to implement them in your birth, and how to communicate this plan to your care team both before and during birth. Okay? So those are just a few things you can do, right? There are more. There are more ways to reduce the risk of cesarean. There's another study I read that showed you can reduce the risk of cesarean by having continuous labor support, meaning a doula, or at the very least a partner who is well informed and trained, like trained by you. Like, you can do that. We do that inside of Unmedicated Academy. We train our partners to be our doulas in case we don't have doulas, because I didn't have a doula. So using comfort measures can also reduce your risk of a cesarean, specifically movement and being upright, which, like, duh, we do not need data to know that what a woman will do intuitively is probably best for birth. How physiology works on its own is what's best for birth. We do not intuitively lay in bed during active labor. We don't intuitively want cervical checks. We don't intuitively want to be induced. And all of that has big potential to mess with your birth plan. Okay, so the easy rule of thumb for avoiding cesarean is to support physiology. Birth workers know this, good midwives and good OBs know this. There are good OBs out there. And this is why we see a much lower cesarean rate with home birth midwifery. So add these last two things to the list for avoiding cesarean is, one, having an out-of-hospital birth. Hopefully at home or a birth center is sometimes a good fit. Birth centers vary greatly on if they're more like home birth or more like hospital birth. But having an out-of-hospital birth can help. Like, you literally can't have a cesarean at home. You have to get in the car, drive, or, you know, be transported, right? It's not just around the corner, available, easy, okay? And number two is finding a provider who believes in supporting physiology and a provider who has a low cesarean rate. You can absolutely ask them, right? That was one of the keys, was a provider who is tracking their cesarean rate, cares about keeping it low, is going to have less cesareans. So ask your provider. And if they don't know, well, that's not good. Okay. That is not good if they are not paying attention to their cesarean rate. And you actually can also look up a hospital's cesarean rate. If you go to like Leapfrog hospital ratings, they have like a maternity tab on there and you can see your hospital's rate. If it's not there, again, red flag. Okay. It's voluntary for them to report these numbers. So if they're not reporting those numbers, it's not a good sign. So to recap, ways you can reduce cesarean: don't get induced. Don't go to the hospital too early. Intermittent auscultation instead of continuous fetal monitoring. Continuous labor support, comfort measures, movement, being upright. Having an out-of-hospital birth, and finding a provider who believes in supporting physiology. Those are the ways you can reduce your risk of cesarean. If you enjoyed this episode, I know you're going to love my birth program. Unmedicated Academy is a comprehensive birth education that is not only going to have you feeling prepared, educated, and confident for your birth, but you'll also walk away knowing all of your options, all of your birthrights, and have killer advocacy skills so that you hold the power in your birth. The podcast is just a little taste of what you'll get inside the program. Are you ready to go all in? You can learn more about Unmedicated Academy at fiercelizzie.com/academy.